You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
From the number one sports site in the world.
Big names.
Bold interviews.
Bold interviews.
Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
On Yahoo Sports Radio.
And yahoosportsradio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
With the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin, and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, it is Friday night, and we are back inside the Quicken Loans studios right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And as promised, it is time now for a U.S. Open recap as Dustin Johnson wins his first major championship at Oakmont Country Club. And I tell you what, we've got so many things to discuss, especially the Dustin Johnson penalty and how he overcomes the controversy to win the Open. Always a true pleasure to have back with us PGA professional and CEO of National Golf Schools. We encourage you to go check out their website, nationalgolfschools.com. That is a dear friend of our program, Patrick Livingston. Good evening on this Friday night, Patrick.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's been an incredible week the golf world.
Did Oakmont live up to expectations?
Oakmont did. Oakmont is, arguably the hardest U.S. school, U.S. Open venue in the country. It's been, durable over the last, 50 years. Fastest greens, of any probably tournament in the country, up near, 14 on the stamp meter. It was a good test of golf, almost too tough. USGA prides itself on trying to set up a golf course as difficult as it can to make these pros hit every shot they need to hit and pay a penalty when they're off a little bit.
You know, last week we even talked about that on our program, just the difficulty of this course. Is it too hard for these players, especially in a major? I mean, what do you think, Pat?
I think that, they want to make par important. I have no trouble with that. But again, you need to, talk about the quickness of the greens. In some cases, if you're beside the hole or above the hole, you simply have no chance of two putting. At a temperature of 14, you can barely take a stroke where the ball is further by the hole. And they tend to just, roll out. And they set up a lot of those pins so that when you are putting, and, where you would hit it normally on that green, it rolls away after the cup. So you'll get a roll out of 4, 5, 6, 10 feet, even though it has just barely gotten to the hole. Incredibly different, difficult. The greens are just as tough as, any place in the world.
Well, Patrick, you're a PGA professional. So what kind of advice would you give to players? I mean, I know you've spent time around Jim Furyk. How do you mentally prepare for Oakmont when you're talking about, many opportunities to three putt, and we all hate three putts, right?
Yeah, you do. And you have to know each of the greens. And they do. There are areas on a green that you simply cannot get to. You may be 15 feet left of the flag and think you've got a birdie opportunity when you're lucky to get par and more than likely to get a bogey. Whereas if you hit it 20 feet short of the green, you got a straight uphill putt. Short of the flag, you have a straight uphill putt, for birdie. So knowing the quadrants on the green and what areas you're going to hit to, it's critical. The pin is there, but the pin is not always your point of aim. So you have to be tactical enough to be able to, you know, make those decisions. And there are several greens that have false front. By that I mean, if you hit 10 feet in front of the flag and the ball doesn't quite get up another foot, it'll come back all the way off the green, 15, 20 feet now and into the fairway. Very, very, very difficult greens.
Oh, that is so frustrating. But regardless of it all, I mean, Dustin Johnson, he is our winner. And let's just say the USGA, Patrick, they got very lucky. The DJ won by more than one stroke. You talk about a very bad moment for them.
It was a bad moment for the USGA. They received criticism from, every area of the golf world. I mean, the great pros, Jordan Spieth and Roy McIlroy, were just, said a lot of commentary, saying about them. Talked about Luke McDonald, probably the most layback pro on the tour. Talked about DJ shouldn't have got the penalty. It was an embarrassment to the USGA. You know, the greens, they're at a slope of 14, and the slopes are, higher than Mount Everest. My goodness, the ball was bound to move in those cases. And when the problem developed on five. And it was a situation where he was getting ready to putt, but he didn't get his putter up behind the ball, didn't touch the ground, and the ball moved. So what you do as a player, you call an official over, and he, you state your case, and he talks to Lee Westwood, who was his playing partner. Now, Westwood, corroborated what Johnson had said, and they made a decision, no penalty. And then he went on, played the hole, and then on 12, USGA official comes out and says, well, we're not really sure. We're going to take a look at this after you finish the course. How do you play that? Do you have the penalty or do you not have the penalty? Tremendous pressure on Johnson. But also, Lowry's tied with him at that time. Doesn't he have a right to know whether it's a penalty or not? Won't he adjust his game depending on whether he's even one down or one up? It affected more than just Justin Johnson and how the pros finished playing that. Very, very bad penalty. Just a major mistake of a USGA. It's an embarrassment to golf. And, the criticism out there is just unending.
It is an embarrassment to golf, but golf is a game that's based on integrity. Why would they not have just taken DJ's word for it?
Well, that's a very good question. Everybody, saw the ball move, but the ball moved back. So he couldn't have, he had not touched the ground. He didn't touch the ball.
He didn't push it forward.
How could he call that ball? How could he cause that ball to move back? If it had moved forward, you might have considered that. But how do you move, how does it move back? And, what they did is they looked at it in slow motion, tried to figure out what had caused it to move. Well, there was no outside element that could have caused it to move, except, the slope of the green, it being on a piece of grass that it just fell off of slightly. And on those fast greens like that, it wouldn't take much. I think people don't know this, but I mean, Johnson had some problems a couple of years ago. He's going into 18. He's getting ready to hit a shot in 18 to get into a playoff, and it was in a sandy area. There were over 200 bunkers on that course, but a bunker by definition is a manicured sand area. Mm-hmm. In that bunker with a beer can, other debris. So he logically thought that it wasn't a bunker. It was a waste area. He played the hole out, then found out afterwards that he was assessed a two-stroke penalty, and he missed the playoff of the chance to win that U.S. Open. Well, Dustin wasn't real happy about that. He had made comments that he didn't think it was fair. His caddy said that. A lot of other people had mentioned that. And I think in USGA's mind, Dustin Johnson embarrassed him, tried to embarrass him. Mm-hmm. And that was, that was going on in the back of the mind. Well, we're not going to let this happen again. We'll get a good video of it and make our decision. And it backfired on him. And, I think some egos at the USGA got in the way of their common sense.
Well, regardless, there's been just tremendous outpouring of support. And as you had mentioned, the golf stars were just outraged and have been very supportive of Dustin Johnson that, he did nothing to cause that ball to move. So I guess I'm just kind of confused. Why would it have taken them seven holes to notify DJ?
Well, they had to go back and review the tape of that. And one one USGA official said, I think it might have moved. I mean, it either moved or it didn't. It might have moved. And they, based on that, they came out and told him on the 12th hole, but they didn't tell Lowry. Isn't it unfair to to Lowry, who was either tied or stroke in front at that time, as to
sure
what Johnson's actual score was? And it they've had other problems, I guess. And in past USGA tournaments, this goes back a number of years, they'd set it up at an Olympic club. Payne Stewart was a shot behind on the third round going into an 18th hole, and they wanted to make that 18th hole tough. So there's a lot of slope in that, but they didn't water it for 2 days, so it's incredibly dry. Payne Stewart, 20 footer in front of the hole, putts up, goes just touches the hole, goes around it, and then comes all the way back into the fringe and had to putt it again. And I can remember him just looking up in the stands and seeing Mike Davis up there and just kind of open his hands up, say, "What the hell am I supposed to do?"
Uh-huh.
And then he went ahead and played the hole. Well, the bottom line is he lost to Lee Jansen by one shot the next day. So that clearly, affected the outcome of the tournament.
Hey, we're recapping the U.S. Open with Patrick Livingston, PGA professional, CEO of National Golf Schools. You want to stick around? The conversation's going to continue right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we continue our conversation with Patrick Livingston, PGA professional and CEO of National Golf Schools, we would love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports. And, of course, this interview is being brought to you by our good friends at Progressive Insurance. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to Progressive. Call or click today and find out what you can save. Well, the bottom line is that all the chaos and confusion, it did not stop Dustin Johnson. He proved he was the U.S. Open champion. And I really think that speaks, Patrick, just to his growth mentally, how tough he is. He ignored the noise and even overcame some very brutal weather conditions.
No, absolutely. He is matured, unquestionably, and most pros agree, he is the most talented golfer out there. He has the most skills, combination of skills, including, no question, he's the best driver on tour, lengthwise and accuracy-wise. His wedge play is improved incredibly. Everybody thinks that he's a bad putter, but he's a average to good putter, which means you can win a lot of good golf tournaments. And to his credit, he didn't say one iota about the penalty that they decided to give him, which was ridiculous. It didn't make any sense whatsoever to give him the penalty because it didn't affect the tournament. They could have got away without any criticism if they just hadn't given the penalty. But again, it's got to be a gigantic ego out there making that decision, and they did. And obviously, his mental toughness is tough. He's in incredibly physically good shape, and this could just be open the barn doors. There's no telling how many majors he may win now. He's only 32 years old. So he's got, 10 with his, with his physical condition, maybe, 10 or 15 years left of good golf. And I cannot just feel better than the way it went for him and the way he's handled it. And even going back to, Chambers Bay when he three-putted, 12 feet.
That was brutal.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, most people would never, ever recover from that. But, bless his heart, he did. And I'm just a big DJ fan.
You have to wonder, too, just his future father-in-law, and Wayne Gretzky, and just the guidance and counsel that he is offering to Dustin Johnson.
Well, that's probably true. Probably an 18-year-old son kind of gets in your head and changes your perspective on life also.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Patrick Livingston with us a few more minutes at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I think one of the definite highlights of the U.S. Open was your guy, Jim Furyk. He closed hard but came up just a little short. 46 years of age. He's still going strong, isn't he?
He is. I played it a lot in the clinics with him. He is just a workaholic. You don't see him in the gym pumping incredible amount of weights, but he's doing all the stretches and,
right,
and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you talk about mentally tough or and being a grinder. You know, his name's beside that, in the dictionary. He just keeps trying to hit good shots. At one time he may have been a top five putter in the tour. He slipped a little bit on that, but he makes a lot of putts that he needs to make. And he's coming off an injury. He hasn't really played competitive for almost a year. And to come back and finish second on that golf course, more power to him. And you'll never find a more gentleman and guy than Jim Furyk.
Well, I have him down that he played in four events in 2016. But as you're talking about, I wanted to ask you, is he 100%? Is he back after his wrist surgery?
Well, surgery is, and wrist damage is the second most prevalent injury in golf. The lower back is first because of the tremendous torque we put on our back. But the wrist injury is significant. And he had it, series one 10 years ago. And missed defending his PGA championship, about 10 years ago. So it's a long process, a long rehab, situation. You just don't, get a surgery on your wrist and come back a week later.
Well, for all of us Phil Mickelson fans, we should be encouraged by this because last week, he turned 46 years of age, and so he could probably still be in the hunt, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had three great tournaments coming into the U.S. Open. Now, he had a second, had a couple, other great tournaments. With his short game, he may be, playing on tour at 59. He can still get up and down from anywhere, and he's sneaky long. And I think he's got a few more years, definitely.
PGA professional Patrick Livingston is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And, of course, we are based here in Houston, and Texas is known for its range of entertainment, incredible size, and southern charm. It is also home to four national golf schools. Wonderful things that you have to offer there. Tell all of our listeners about that, Patrick.
Yeah, we've got two great golf schools, especially up in the Dallas area, the Winner's Circle. Is a great golf course, a Norman golf course, and they have an incredible hotel there, the golf resort. You've got ceiling to floor windows overlooking either the course or Texas Speedway up there. We've actually put together a golf school package where you can come in for 3-day golf school, play the wonderful course, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice.
And they set you up for 8 laps at the Texas Speedway, where you go down and actually get into some of these incredible vehicles. You're trained by a driver, then you're out there for 8 laps. It's kind of a guy thing. Don't take that wrong now. It's kind of a guy thing.
I won't.
Right? Okay. And we've been, it's been interesting. And we have another, this is in North Dallas. It's called the Tribute. It's an 18-hole replica course. I mean, you're playing, the 18th a lot of great courses over in Scotland and in England. You're playing at, the Postage Stamp at Royal Troon. So you're playing all these great golf holes around the world on 18 holes. And it's got another unique aspect to it. The clubhouse is like it's like a Scottish manor. And
nice.
We have 10 or 12 suites in there. You have the Palmer Suite. You have the Nicholas Suite. And they're done in period times, high bedposts, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just a treat to play in that atmosphere, a good golf course, a great golf atmosphere, and just a great way of doing it.
And as we get ready to wrap up our interview, I understand you guys are stretching out. Bigger is always better. A new one, golf school, National Golf School in Orlando and also at Cape Cod, correct?
I tell you, we are really featuring the Cape Cod location. Cape Cod is a wonderful place. It's called Hyannis Golf Club. You're right near the ocean. You've got a cooler climate down there, so if you want to get away from the heat and humidity, drop into Cape Cod. Great lodging, one of our nicer golf courses. Really, really happy to be there.
PGA professional, CEO of National Golf Schools. Go to nationalgolfschools.com for more information. Always an honor to have Patrick on our program. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. I love talking to you, and, you know, keep playing golf. It's, you've got it for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Much more in hour number two right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at eRadio Sports, and we will be right back.
Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
The Big E.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show in hour number two. As promised, it is time for a book review in our next segment, and a big season for the Toronto Blue Jays as they are in their 40th season of professional baseball. And since they joined the league, they have certainly experienced the full spectrum of success, from the typical lows of expansion, growing up in the shadow of a storied division with rivals in the Yankees and the Red Sox. And of course, we will never forget the ultimate high of back-to-back World Series in 92 and 93. The Blue Jays have contributed a great deal to the history of the game. I am looking so forward to this interview. Up next right here at YSR, we have invited veteran sports writer Shai Duvide, who is with us, and he's going to talk about his brand new book that is out, Toronto Blue Jays and the Big 50. Congratulations on the book, and welcome in to Yahoo Sports Radio on this Friday.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, Shai, let's talk about the Toronto Blue Jays, because currently they are third in the American League East right now, and we are quickly approaching, before you know it, the midpoint of the season is going to be here. What are your thoughts on how everything has played out up to this point?
Well, they've managed to have a pretty successful run, and they're right in the thick of things, but the route that they've gotten there probably is well outside of people's expectations. Everyone thought that their bullpen was going to be all right, their offense was going to be tremendous, and the starting rotation was going to be a trouble spot. And it's really the starting rotation that's carried them in large measure to this point. The offense has woken up the past month or so, but it really slumped badly, especially by their standards, in the first 2 months of the season. And the bullpen has stabilized of late, but has been a trouble spot really from the get-go. And so, the Blue Jays, in a lot of ways, in spite of themselves, are right in contention. And they've only really started to turn the corner probably here in June. And once they really start rolling, the thought and thinking is their best baseball is ahead of them.
Shai Duvide is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's a baseball columnist. He's also a television analyst with Sportsnet in Toronto, covering his Blue Jays. It's interesting because when you look at entering into the 2016 season, there were higher expectations as the Blue Jays captured the AL East title and made the playoffs for the first time in 22 seasons. It was a breakthrough season, and the bar was set much higher. What were your projections? You're close with the team. What were your projections coming into this year?
I thought that they had a pretty good chance to repeat as American League East champions. I think the three teams that are right at the top of the division right now, the Red Sox and the Orioles, they're in some way, they have a lot of similarities. They all boast tremendous offenses. They're all pretty good defensive clubs, and they each have, although different issues within their pitching staff. And so I thought the Blue Jays had as good a chance as any of the other teams to emerge as division champions, and I still think that. But really, at this point, it's going to come down to the attrition and which team's able to stay healthiest, and maybe which team's able to make the right adds come the trade deadline. Because we saw what that did for the Blue Jays last year. Dave Dombrowski is running the Red Sox now, and he's always been very aggressive in helping his team. So a lot of people are expecting the Red Sox to really make some impact adds and perhaps push that team over the edge.
Can the Blue Jays get back to having, like they did last year, that record-setting season at the plate last year? They lit it up.
To expect them to put up that many runs again and to outdo the rest of baseball by 127 runs, that was probably too much to ask. You had a lot of guys who had real career seasons, mm-hmm. or seasons that are right towards their peak performance levels. So it's reasonable to expect some sort of drop off. That being said, now that Michael Saunders is going and he's really been a tremendous addition in their lineup. Edwin Encarnacion's heating up. Josh Donaldson's been good of late. Jose Bautista is on the disabled list right now, but once he returns, he's going to be a factor too. I mean, they can still be an elite premium offense. And even as they are right now, they're still among the better offensive teams in baseball. So I don't know that they're going to be quite as productive as they were last year, but given the way their starting rotation is performed to this point, they don't have to be.
We are shining the spotlight on the Toronto Blue Jays, also talking about the brand new book, Toronto Blue Jays and the Big 50, with author, baseball columnist, and television analyst with Sportsnet in Toronto, Shai Duvidet. How much of a drop-off offensively are you talking about in terms of just their output this year at the plate?
Well, I mean, their OPS in the first 2 months of the season was somewhere in the low 700s, and that's not
wow.
This team. I mean, they've been in the high 800s so far this month,
uh-huh.
And that's more along their lines, and that's going to normalize over the course of the season. But I don't think that they scored about 900 runs last year, and to say that they were going to do that again in this era, that's a lot to ask of any team. I mean, this should still be an 800-plus run club. This should still be among the top three teams in the American League in run production. And by the time all said and done, and I expect it to be, but again, they were just so off the charts last year. I mean, the run differential that they had was just absurd in a lot of ways. And they played like that. And once they fortified a couple of their foundational issues last year, they really took off with that 41-17, 41-18 run to close out the year. So that's the potential here. But again, that's a really high ceiling. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to quite reach it the same way again.
You know, Shai, we're wrapping up the month of June. It'll be over before you know it. I mean, where are you seeing them in terms of, are you seeing some progress and they're starting to do a better job?
Yeah, I mean, offensively, they really took off at the towards late May-ish when Jose Bautista and a few of the other players came. Manager John Gibbons had a few ideas for the batting order. Bautista moved from his traditional three spot to the leadoff role,
mm-hmm.
And so they could have Bautista, Donaldson, and Encarnacion 1-2-3 in the lineup, and that really changed the way pitchers were approaching them. And once that happened, the offense started making a little bit, some gains, started delivering the type of production that was more expected of them. And they've been better since, the return of Devin Travis off from the disabled list, even though he went through a bit of a dry spell, which he seems to be emerging from now. That's helped too and helped deepen the lineup. So offensively, they're close or much closer to where they should be. The bullpen is the other area where, they've really needed to make some improvements, and some guys have gotten better. The addition of Jason Grilli has been actually pivotal because it gave them a bit more depth in that seventh, eighth inning, and he's really emerged as a key setup guy. It's allowed Gavin Floyd, Joe Biagini, and Jesse Chavez to slot into roles that they're more suited for. So the bullpen has gotten better. Drew Storen, who was expected to be a key eighth inning guy, and hasn't been that to this point, but he's showing signs of turning the corner, and those things are important because they're going to need all those things to play out correctly for them in order to stay to catch Boston and send off Baltimore. So that's the way they've been trending. But there's still some work to do for the Blue Jays on both fronts.
You know, it's interesting. A moment ago, you had mentioned Jose Bautista. What is the value of him? I mean, is he on the decline? And are the chances of a five-year contract, is that diminishing?
It's an interesting question. I think whenever a player gets injured, there's always this reactionary knee-jerk motion to think, oh, this guy's not good anymore. This guy's too injury-prone. And he suffered a freak injury making a hustle play in the outfield, and you have to you have to appreciate that about him. And it takes a lot to get him out of the lineup. He plays through a lot of pain. He plays through a lot of different injuries. So you know that what he's dealing with is fairly serious. Now, is his value in decline? I'm not certain it's in decline, because he's still a very good offensive performer. And those are a rare commodity in baseball these days.
We are shining the spotlight on the Toronto Blue Jays with Shai Dubede. Stick around, much more straight ahead in our conversation after this quick timeout.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Baseball columnist and author of his new book, Toronto Blue Jays and the Big 50. We're going to highlight that here in just a moment. He is also a television analyst with Sportsnet in Toronto. We're talking about his Toronto Blue Jays. That is Shai Dubede, who is with us tonight right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. If you're just tuning in, hey, join us at Twitter. We're interactive at E Radio Sports. And you can always go back and listen to the entirety of this interview at podcastarena.com. And Shai, connect with our audience across the country. Where can they check you out online?
Well, I am on Twitter, Twitter handle SHIDAVIDI, and my work appears on sportsnet.ca, where I write a regular column.
I promise we're going to get into the book here in just a moment. Just a couple more questions. Give us an update on, Marcus Stroman. You had mentioned him, his assessment of where he's at this point. I mean, he's fighting through, trying to muscle through some struggles. Some say they should give up on him as a starter and move him to the bullpen. What do you think?
I think that, again, there's a lot of emotional knee-jerk reaction to, five bad starts within a span of seven outings. But clearly he's in need of making a mechanical adjustment, and everyone knows what that adjustment is. You know, he needs to be on top of the ball, getting downhill playing. And mm-hmm. He went through some issues with that a couple of times. In 2014, he was able to make some adjustments, and this time it seems to be taking him a little bit longer, so it's something he's going to have to deal with. But the Blue Jays have been talking about doing some other things with him, too, in terms of changing, maybe paring down his repertoire. You know, he had too many pitches, too many of his pitches look similar, so trying to get some different looks. And that's going to be, a process that may take a few starts for him. But the upside that he's shown as a starter, you don't just give up on that because mm-hmm. Someone's had a bad month. And, that's in a lot of ways, the age that we live in. It's what have you done for me this second?
And, right. There's
a lot of emotion tied to every single game and, hyper analysis of every single thing. And it's difficult to take the long view. But the long view here is that, this is a key player who's had a bad month in the bit, and he just needs a little bit of patience and an opportunity to figure things out, which I think the Blue Jays are going to give him.
Okay, so let's move ahead. Let's talk about your new book, The Men and the Moments That Made the Toronto Blue Jays, The Big 50. It details just the entertaining history that the Blue Jays, I know that the fans are going to find tremendous value in. Tell us about it.
Well, with the 40th season coming around, it was kind of a good time to take a look back at some of the best times for the Blue Jays have experienced as a franchise. And, in a way, it's kind of useful because the Blue Jays made a lot of new fans who may not have been even born yet when the Blue Jays went through the so-called glory years,
right,
in 92, 93, and also the mid-80s. And I think for a lot of fans who were around during that period, the last year's run into the postseason stirred some memories. And so it's an opportunity to look at some nostalgic moments. And what I try to do was tell people some different stories and tell people some things they didn't know about people who were instrumental in shaping the franchise over the past four decades.
The Big 50, Toronto Blue Jays, the men and moments that made the Toronto Blue Jays. I want you to share with all the listeners, what did you talk about in terms of with the World Championships in 92 and 93? I mean, that's incredible, back-to-back.
Yeah, I mean, so each one of those has their own chapter. Not in its entirety, but, you know, so a fair amount of the 92 chapter looks at, you know, the just some of the what it took for the franchise to get there and what it was like for the Blue Jays to actually scale that. You know, the Blue Jays experienced a lot of heartbreak between 85 and 92 getting there. There were so many missed opportunities, so many teams that probably should have done more that didn't. And that, in a lot of ways, made 92 very cathartic, as much as it was joyous, because there was so much longing for it, and the buildup had been so big, and mm-hmm. there was some, you know, whenever you have struggles, you fail, that creates baggage. So, you know, there was some organizational baggage that was being carried at that point, and finally getting over the hump that night at Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta really allowed people to be free of it, and that was a lot of the focus on the 92 chapter. The 93 chapter focused a bit more on how it was just a lot more fun, because there wasn't that same longing, there wasn't the same angst. It's you know, the mountain had been scaled, the peak had been reached, and it was all about, hey, let's try and get back there again. And you know, the Blue Jays turned over a fair amount of their roster that year, or between those two seasons, and that group was able to get it done as well. And so it was a very different sort of championship for the Blue Jays, but each one obviously has a ton of meaning. And you know, as they say, flags fly forever, and you know, people have been longing for another one ever since.
It is a tremendous read, again, titled The Men and the Moments That Made the Toronto Blue Jays the Big 50. Congratulations, Shai, on your book. And we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Fantastic. First time on the show, and you were a fantastic guest. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
That, of course, was Shai Duvidet, baseball columnist and author of his new book, Toronto Blue Jays and the Big 50. Want to thank all of our amazing guests in our lineup tonight. Patrick Livingston, PGA professional, CEO of National Golf Schools. Our very own Joe George of YSR, and Andy Pondillo with our weekly MLB news and notes. And Motez Bashara from CNN, the feature writer and author of Beating the NBA, Tales of a Frugal Fan. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.